I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome to You Had to Be There, the podcast where we deep dive into the crowds of concerts, festivals, the music industry, and more. I'm your host, Julia Gomberg. I'm extremely excited to release the second episode of my new podcast series featuring one-on-one interviews with some of the best in the biz. Jess George is one of the most effortlessly cool people I've gotten to work with and meet in the industry. She's a highly experienced project manager at Live Nation with a proven track record of overseeing touring programs, festival operations, backstage hospitality, and venue operations. It was a really cool episode, and I personally learned a lot. Be sure to also check out Jess's personally curated Spotify playlist, which you can find on the You Had to Be There Instagram at letter U, Had to Be There Pod. I've been listening to it nonstop since she made it, so I highly recommend checking it out after you listen to the episode. Thank you so much for the love and support, and I hope you enjoy the episode as much as I did. See you next time. Cool. Well, can you introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi. Do you say hi on this? Sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, whatever you want is fine.
Okay. I've already messed it up. Hey, I'm Jess George. I'm a live events professional. And yeah, I'm excited to be on You Had to Be There podcast.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being a guest. We're really excited to have you.
Excited to be here.
Awesome. And where are you based?
I am based in Washington, D.C.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely have questions about that, but we'll get to it when we get to it. Can you kind of walk us through, I guess starting from the beginning, what interested you in music? Like, what was the first kind of moment that you had that was like, this is what I want to do?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I had a friend who worked part-time at the closest amphitheater to where I live. So that is Meriwether Post Pavilion, which has a special place in my heart. So she worked part-time there. And I thought, wow, that's cool. I didn't really think that you could, I don't know, it just had never occurred to me that you could work at a concert venue.
Right.
And so for my junior and senior year of high school, I was a crew member. So I did ticket scanning and I was backstage security, which is hilarious because I'm 5'2 and small in general. but I did it. And that really started to make me think about, okay, there are people here who clearly are adults that are making a living off of working in music.
Right.
And in particular, when I started getting shifts backstage, it was really interesting because I would just get to really, I would stand and guard different doors to make sure that people had the right passes. But it was a great learning experience because I could hear, I was just watching what the tour was saying to each other and learning all of these positions that I didn't know existed before. Like, what is a tour manager? What is there was a touring security person.
Right.
Sometimes there was a touring hospitality person. And, it was also really cool because people on the tours, I never expected this from them, but I did have some moments where they would actually ask me questions about, you know, was I in school? What am I interested in? And it was cool to be able to start to tell them, actually, I'm kind of interested in working in music. And then when they had time, usually when the headliner was on the stage, they would come and talk to me, which was really cool.
That's so cool. So you were really like immersed in it from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some artist teams that I feel like I just still have such a soft spot for, because I felt like they were really kind to me as a, you know, young high schooler. Like I remember Blink-182 came for, it was a radio station festival that they had at Merriweather for called DC 101. They're kind of the alt rock station for this area. Mm-hmm. And that was peak Warped Tour scene obsession for me. So I was already really excited that I was stationed backstage for Blink-182, which was a band that I had loved at the time. And
totally.
Yeah. And it was just such a cool, I mean, all of the touring people made a point to really talk to me, learn my name. Mark Hoppus was really cool with me and asked me about working in music. And oh my gosh, aww. I was 17 and I was losing my mind.
That's internally. So cool. Right, yeah. Right. But that's also really such cool. A good skill to learn early on. I feel like when you're going to be surrounded by so many people like that, to like learn how to kind of keep your cool.
Yeah, totally. And pretend like it really is for a while pretending like you believe that you belong there.
Yeah.
Which sounds terrible, but I mean, it can be an intimidating environment to be in, but you fake it until it feels more natural.
Right. And I mean, it sounds like it was totally natural for you, especially that early on. So what did that kind of lead you to doing next?
Yeah. So then I had started college at University of Maryland, and I started doing some small gigs here and there, selling merch at different venues, doing some VIP meet and greet gigs. And I would say the biggest learning experience for me in college was joining my college programming board.
Oh, which, okay.
Yeah, they're responsible for doing all of the comedy shows and concerts and performing arts experiences. And so I learned a lot of different things because I had a few director roles. So I learned a little bit about, it is very different from quote unquote real world talent buying, but you do still learn, how do I send an offer to an artist team and how do I negotiate and
right.
How do you get on the phone in advance with someone? So I learned a form of talent buying. I learned hospitality and production. Mm-hmm. And I really felt like it gave me a solid foundation to then get internships outside of school that were in different parts of the music industry.
Yeah, definitely. Especially I would imagine at a school as big as like University of Maryland, you had some pretty cool shows you got to work with, and just like really cool opportunities. Were there any like standout ones that you got to do?
Yeah. So I have an answer for something in particular that I worked on first, because mm-hmm. it's not necessarily a huge name, but it's it was an event that meant a lot to me.
Yeah, so, please share.
Yeah, I'm a big Against Me fan. And so when I got it was called the Performing Arts Director role, which was one of the kind of talent buyer roles. Once I got that position, I immediately knew I wanted to bring Laura Jane Grace, who's the lead singer of Against Me, to do some sort of performance conversation in collaboration with the different pride organizations that they have on campus, because she's a trans woman who
Wow.
has written a book about her experience you know, being raised by the punk scene and what it was like to, you know, have this finally, this moment of being her truest self in a scene that in a lot of ways likes to present itself as being progressive, but in reality, she found it to be a really hard experience to transition and be seen in the way that is truest to her.
Right.
And I've always admired her. I love her music, both her solo music and also her band's music. And so once I got that position, that was the first event that I really tried to plan, and it didn't, I was nervous because I had to, it wasn't just, I was of course nervous about the behind the scenes stuff, but I mm-hmm. also had to be on stage with her and ask her questions. Yeah. And, you know, I love it for all of its imperfections, and I'm sure that I am harder on myself than other people were who went to the event, but right. it wasn't perfect. And I also kind of love that about the experience, you know?
Yeah, it's so authentic. And I mean, like, yes. what a cool way to, I feel like it sounds already like your approach is just sort of diving into things hands-on. And that's, in my opinion, one of the best ways to learn, especially in this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And to as much as you can, try not to judge yourself while you're learning, because we're right. all, there's never a point where that you reach where you think I understand everything and I can do no wrong and I will never fail again.
Right.
You know, that's just part of life. So easier said than done, but I feel like approaching it that way has been a helpful, I'm not perfect at it, but I try every time to approach it in that way.
Absolutely. And I had no idea, honestly, like I'm kind of embarrassed how little I knew about Against Me. I've heard of them, yeah. but now I need to do like a whole deep dive because that sounds so interesting.
They're so good.
That's so cool. Well, I have a fun question later on that I'll use them for, but awesome. And anything else? I didn't know if I cut you off, but.
No, you're good. It was, the experience was cool because we were able to have people like Trevor Noah and Lil Yachty and Vince Staples and Anthony right. from Queer Eye, you know? And so right. you're a 20-year-old talking to these people who were largely very respectful of us too, which was a nice surprise in a lot of ways. Yeah, all of these things I felt like really validated me. I feel grateful that I had so many experiences where people were respectful and validated that this career path was something that I could actually achieve.
Absolutely. No, that's really, really cool. And I guess in terms of like working and living in a less music major market, can you kind of talk about that experience? Like, was it more challenging? Did you enjoy it more? You know, not being in like maybe New York or LA, like what was that experience like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love talking about this because I just feel like when I would have informational interviews with people earlier on in me deciding that I wanted to pursue this career, I feel like, and I don't fault them for saying this, but I feel like so many people told me you need to be prepared to move to LA or New York to then right. be able to make it in the industry. So I had moments, if you ask my parents, they will say the same thing. I had moments where I was like, Mom, Dad, I'm moving to LA at this time because I right. need to do this, to, you know, and New York too. I had moments for both of those cities where I said, okay, by this day, I'm going to do it.
Right.
I think I do believe that it is very dependent on what side of the industry you want to get in, because my biggest piece of advice for people who want to get into the industry in any city is to get involved with your local music scene and kind of build up from there. Because right. there is still a scene there. It's going to be different than going to LA or New York. But I would also argue that it's probably easier to slowly start making those connections and building your reputation up, because it's not as highly saturated.
Right.
And potentially less cutthroat and all of those things. What's cool is I feel like I have reached a point in my career where I travel to anywhere in the country to do my job, and I'm not even technically based specifically in the DC music scene anymore, but I get to live where I want. I'm close geographically to my family, which is something that's really important to me. And those were all things that early on I thought I would have to give up in order to really get that first big job in the music industry. And you don't really have to, at least in the live event space, I would say.
Yeah, I think that is probably surprising to a lot of people, because you do hear, like, I think New York and LA just get almost too much credit. And even with this podcast, I was worried, like, I was only going to be focusing on those markets with the people I'm interviewing being based in New York. So I was really curious. Yeah, like, wow, there's just so much opportunity if you're in the right, I guess, part of the industry, like you said, which is really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. There's totally merit in going to New York or LA to make it happen. You just don't have to.
Right. No, exactly. From college, what happened after that or during that with internships and your other opportunities you've had?
Yeah. So in college, I interned at a few different places. So I interned for 930 Club is a really famous DC club. It is now technically the direct competitor to the company that I work for now, Live Nation. But it's also how I met one of my roommates that I live with now. We both interned at 930 Club at the same time. But
oh, that's awesome.
So I interned there for some of the venues that that company owns in the DC area. I interned at SiriusXM and quickly realized I do not want to be a DJ or somebody who works in some sort of radio or audio editing, but it was a very cool opportunity regardless. Definitely. And then I interned for, I actually don't even know if they call themselves the same thing now, but at the time they were called Superfly, and they were a festival production company. And I interned in San Francisco working on Outside Lands, and it was so cool. And I worked remotely on, I'm pretty sure the festival only happened 1 year, but it was called Grand Doozy, and it was happening in Denver. And they got really popular because they started Bonnaroo, but they sold it to C3/Five Nation in 2019, I want to say. So they really, I don't think that they do any sort of festival production anymore. From my understanding, the last time that I looked them up was they were the company that was working on that. There was a Friends activation space and the Office activation, you know, those things that pay money and walk through. Yeah. So they've definitely, it's interesting how they've decided to pivot, but
that is interesting. Also, funny enough, the Friends exhibit or whatever is like across the street from my first apartment in New York. And it opened after. Yeah. It opened after I moved. And I'm like, so glad I don't live there anymore, because there's always a lot like around the corner. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. I'm sure that affects the people that do live in that apartment complex. I interned in a couple places, and then when I graduated in May of 2019. A big goal of mine was to go on tour, and I felt like that was the opportunity to really dig in work. I had been doing some freelance work in college, but once I graduated, doing gigs as many days the week as I could to make those connections and tell people I was open to tour and see what happened there. But then the pandemic hit. So that was kind of short lived. And it's just funny too, because I had been doing the live events work for a little while. And then I was on the thought pattern of, okay, I need to get a full-time job in LA. So I had been applying to a bunch of jobs. I had, at that point, I had a final round interview for a talent agency in LA right before the pandemic hit. And then at the time was devastated that they were saying they were freezing all this hiring. I just thought, oh, my shot of living in LA and working in the music industry, I don't know what's going to happen.
Wow.
Which I know many people have had, my story is not unique.
Yeah. But like, you know, I get that, especially it's unique in the sense that you were so driven and passionate about touring specifically. And that was like the biggest, one of the biggest industries that got screwed over by the pandemic. Yeah. But yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah. I'm curious also, so having worked at a festival versus your interest in touring, what made you more interested in touring and kind of moving around versus maybe just like a festival setting?
Yeah. So the festival internship was really cool and I learned a lot from it, but festivals, from the experience that I had, it really is 2 to 3 weeks of intense on-site festival work with really long, months-long periods of just sitting in an office, getting on Zoom calls and looking at CAD designs. And it was just funny to me. It was so different from what I expected it was going to be like, because we would sit there and there would be I guess it's a CAD engineer. I don't know what the specific job title is called, but we would sit on there with the festival map. It was a weekly recurring call, and it was amusing to me because some of these calls would be like, well, we need the porta potty to be slid 2 feet over, and we just sit there watching him drag it a little bit farther. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is festival operations, I should say.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I realized what I really liked was the on-site work. And so, you know, there's the festivals are also a higher level of risk and take multiple years generally to be profitable. And just, I don't know, it was a side of the industry that I felt less inclined to continue to pursue down that path. And so I was excited about the idea of working more. At the time, I thought more on the tour side of shows. And now I've realized I really like the venue side of shows.
Right. No, that definitely makes sense to kind of end up where you are, having tried going from that transition of like festival to touring to now where you are. And I totally agree. Like, it's so, I think festivals, for like just an attendee who's not in the industry, thinks it's like, oh, it's like almost like I always equate it to like planning a birthday party where maybe you plan it like a month out at most. And then like, you're just like, we'll see what happens. It'll be fun. Like, we have the spot, but it's like, no. It's somewhat tedious, like you said. And yeah. And it's like, you don't really get to experience it except for the week of, I guess.
Yeah. 100%. So COVID was, my story is similar to a lot of other music people. I am grateful that I was able to be in my parents' home. Right. I was applying to jobs all the time, was, you know, having existential crises about, oh my gosh, am I just never gonna, is my entire vision of what I thought my career path was going to be just completely wrong? Am I never going to work in the music industry ever again? In that time, I also got my master's in project management, which it's so weird how things work out, but it's the job that I'm currently in now. I am a project manager, and I use my project management education, which is crazy.
That's so cool.
But, yeah. And, so really live events didn't start coming back. It is state specific because, of course, you know, the Texas and Florida states, right, they were having shows. Did they ever really stop having shows? I'm not sure.
Yeah, fair.
but generally in my area, it was kind of June and July of 2021. And so before the pandemic, one of the jobs that I had was I was a production runner for the Fillmore in Silver Spring. I was a production runner for the Fillmore in Silver Spring, but I was also a runner for just the Live Nation DC region. So I would sometimes do arena shows and shows at the large indoor room that they have. So I generally had a connection with the company. And once the Fillmore started opening back up, I came back as a runner. And then I saw a position online for a full-time general manager assistant for the person who oversaw the Fillmore and Warner Theater, which is this really beautiful historic theater in downtown DC. It's right by the monuments. It's a gorgeous building. Yeah. And so because I knew the production manager at the Fillmore, I emailed her just saying, "Hey, I saw this Fillmore position. I applied and I'm definitely really interested." And so she pushed me through to have an interview with the general manager, and I got the job. That was my first full-time job in music, which was really exciting. Yeah.
That's so cool. And like, good for you for like, I mean, it goes without saying like how important connections are, but I think even more so it's about like utilizing them. And it sounds like you really made that happen for yourself. So that's great.
For sure. And I worked as a GM assistant for, I guess it was around a year. And so my boss, who was the general manager, she is amazing. I consider her a mentor. I appreciate how much I've learned from her, both in what she has directly taught me and also just being able to watch her as a leader is just amazing. Mm. And so she got promoted to be the head of clubs, which is the leader of all of the clubs in the country, which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's all of the rooms that are 1700 and below capacity.
Oh, wow.
So like 20, I want to say 23 or 24 of them. And the big ones are Irving Plaza, the original Fillmore in San Francisco. There's TLA in Philly. Warsaw is one of them. And so when she was promoted, she also needed a coordinator to come with her. So she took me to come with her in that national role, which was really cool.
That's so cool. Working in events and kind of the time commitment and just how it's sort of different hours, like, was that a big adjustment for you? Like, how did, because obviously, yeah, it's not a 9-to-5. What has that experience been like for you?
It's interesting. When I was freelancing, it was exhausting. It was very irregular hours. I felt like I couldn't really have that much of a social life because most shows are happening on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is when all the other people generally have that time off. So I wasn't seeing friends as much. And it was a concern of mine wanting to work in live events, but also wanting to have a personal life.
Right.
And moving through a couple of positions that I've had, I've actually found myself in a place where My job is largely a desk job, unless I have to travel for work, which then it's a little bit of irregular hours, and I'm usually there for a show, so I'm there right. later. But without realizing that that was how things were going to go, I kind of slowly found myself in a position where I am able to have a decent amount of balance with that, which is great. But if you work either on a tour, of course, or if you're a local right. venue person, you are at the mercy of the show calendar. And right. I don't know personally if I would really want to do that long term.
Yeah, it does seem like it's difficult to remain sustainable after a certain point.
Yeah.
But that's great that you've kind of figured out what works for you. I think that's also really important too, because obviously like burnout is a very real thing in this industry.
Yeah. So when I was in this, it was an operations coordinator was my title for the clubs.
Right. Okay.
And my boss, again, is wonderful and always knew that that position was going to be some sort of transitional position. So her goal mm-hmm. was always, let's give you as many opportunities as possible in different positions, different working with different departments, so that I could actually figure out where I wanted to go next, because it was a jump from a local level position to a national role.
Right.
And the national roles are, being in that national role, even just being in a coordinator role, was huge, because I was actually able to understand what the different departments are and what they actually do. Mm-hmm. It's funny. It was kind of the first department that she had suggested maybe I look a little bit more into. They're called the process management team, which I always have to explain more of what that actually means. Because it sounds kind of generic. She had said, hey, there's this department that they're kind of the problem solvers of the company. They do venue openings, and they're also just kind of the jack of all trades. They get other wow. random projects that, yeah, basically projects that are difficult that the company needs help figuring out.
Right.
Sometimes they're not very glamorous projects. Like, they were responsible for figuring out all of the COVID test shipping when we first came back.
Oh, wow.
Which I do not envy at all, because
no.
seemed like a nightmare.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's hilarious too, because for a while I just thought, oh, process management, they're the COVID test people. I didn't realize that they
that's
did
their thing.
Other things. Yeah. Yep.
That's funny.
So it was awesome, because my boss let me, she said, so we have a club that's reopening in September of 23, which is Warsaw. And so in between the Warsaw reopening, she said, oh, they're actually opening a venue in Minneapolis next month. And do you want to, they said they would love the help. Do you want to travel with them to work on this venue opening?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, I said yes, but in my head, I'm thinking, I don't even know what venue openings involve. Mm. And then I ended up basically living in Minneapolis. Every week I would fly out to Minneapolis.
Wow.
Beginning of the week, fly back around Thursday or Friday to get this venue. It's called Uptown Theater in Minneapolis. Get that venue open.
Wow.
And I loved it. It was the perfect mix of, in my coordinator role, it really was just a desk job, which was right. fine, but I missed working on the show part too. And starting to work on venue openings, it kind of scratched the itch of the running around, production, operations, all of those things. I feel like I got that, the show adrenaline rush again, just running right. around trying to figure out how to open a building.
That's so cool. I know in a different context, like, I know that feeling of like when you are like, this is exactly what kind of was missing, or like, this is where my passion really lives and it feels like fulfilled. Yeah. That's awesome.
Totally. Yeah. And so I worked on Uptown Theater in Minneapolis with them. And then I was kind of the de facto help for them, still being in the coordinator role. And it was so nice that my boss let me also take that on in addition to being her coordinator. So we did Warsaw and Brooklyn, and then we opened a venue called Vibrant Music Hall in Des Moines, Iowa, which was very interesting.
Wow. Yeah. You're going to so many interesting markets.
Yeah. And it's cool because when else would I go to Iowa, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
And so then one of the people from the process management department had reached out to me and said, hey, we're actually looking to hire another project manager. Because at that time it was just the VP of process management and one project manager, and they had one coordinator. That was the entire process management department.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And honestly, it's a huge, it says everything about the work that they do, that for a while the company was like, I mean, you guys are handling it just with three of you, so we don't need to give you more people.
Wow.
Yeah, they're amazing. So they said, we're hiring another person. You're basically doing the job that we're looking for. Obviously there was more I had to learn outside of just the venue openings piece, but so I ended up getting, I had to of course interview, and there were other candidates that they had looked at as well, but I didn't formally transition until the new year. So beginning of January.
Wow. Time flies. 'Cause I remember when you when that happened, and now it's May.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know, right?
Does it feel like it's went fast? Like, how do you feel now since, like, in terms of adjusting and everything?
It has felt like it has flown by. Even I feel like we're still in April, and you said May. I'm like, shoot, it is May.
Right.
Actually pretty amazing how easy of a transition it has felt like. And I am grateful for the team that I work with, because I credit so much of that to them, because I feel like they gave me parameters to learn things, but also I was given more projects at the beginning, and it was kind of trusted, like, hey, you're taking this on. And they just trusted me to take that and run with it. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's been such a great learning environment. It has been at times feeling a little bit like I am an imposter, because we are working with the heads of, it's called Venue Nation. That's the venue side of Live Nation. Sometimes I feel like, I don't know, should I be in this meeting? Should I be talking in this meeting? Do I have something to contribute? You know, but I have never been made to feel like any of the executives that I've worked with have nothing but full confidence in me to be able to work on the projects that I am, which is really, I appreciate that culture of the company so much.
Yeah, that's huge. And I mean, I think you're underplaying your talent a little bit, but that being said, I know the other side of the coin, because it's not always like that in this industry. People do not look out for you, or do not necessarily express their support. So I think that to have the capability, and then to have someone kind of validating that and kind of gaslighting you into realizing you do have that ability is so special and so important.
Yeah, absolutely. It is it's positive gaslighting.
I was like, is that the right? It's a little derogatory, but I feel like it fits.
No, I like it.
So how many openings have you worked on since you started this role?
I guess technically two. So Brooklyn Paramount was a big one in March. And then we are responsible for openings and also acquisitions. So there was a small comedy club also in Brooklyn called the Bell House that we took over in April.
Oh, Okay, interesting. Yeah, I went to a comedy show there, and I had been there in previous years, and it was last month, and I was like, wow, this feels different in a really organized way.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
That's so funny, and I didn't even know that they were acquired, but that makes so much sense.
Yes. What was the show?
It was a comedian, Robbie Hoffman. She had like a podcast thing.
Isn't she's dating someone who is on, yes, I love them both. I follow them on TikTok.
Oh my gosh. Awesome. I love them too. Yeah. I was a huge Gabby fan. And then, especially as a Jewish person, Robbie Hoffman is like literally Larry David as a lesbian. Yes. And I love it.
Yes. 100%.
The podcast is really funny. Yeah. And Gabby was there. So it was very exciting.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a great venue. And I was like happy to see that it was like thriving. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, Brooklyn Paramount, can you talk a little bit about that? It looks stunning from the outside.
Right? It's beautiful. And I had nothing to do with the construction of it. It's funny when some of my friends came to some of the opening events, they're like, oh my gosh, Jess, this building is beautiful. And I was like, thank you. I had nothing to do with any of the construction. I agree. So
funny. You're right.
It was a music venue in the early 1900s, I want to say. I mean, historic people, Ella Fitzgerald, Miles Davis. There are so many really cool black and white photos of people that performed at the old Brooklyn Paramount back in the day. And then it was bought by Long Island University.
Oh, wow.
Which is neighbors to them.
Right. And
they used it as a basketball court, which is crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. You have to see photos of it because the beautiful ceiling and detail work kind of in the top part of the main room, they still had. And so it looks so out of place when you have that and then just a basketball court.
Like, yeah, my brain is like not processing.
Yeah. And so I guess it was purchased back from Long Island University to be converted back into a concert venue.
Whoa.
So in August, I was in New York and we also ended up doing a walkthrough of the Paramount while it was still under construction. And that was really cool because the basketball part of the basketball court was still there and there was a ton of scaffolding. And I'm like, man, I'm sure this will look really nice, but right now it's hard to picture how this is going to turn out.
Right.
And so I took a ton of photos and now I look at those photos and it's crazy to see how much they changed about the place from then until now. And then for pretty much the entirety of March, every week we were there for at least a few days at a time each week to work on more things, organizing the space, getting credentials set up, uniforms, all of those random pieces.
Yeah. I was going to ask like, yeah, it's like specifically just maybe to someone who has gone to like a show once or twice, like who wouldn't really know what happens behind the scenes. Like, yeah. What are those tangible things that like you work on?
Each opening is different, which is fun, but there are fun and sometimes tough, but
yeah,
there are certain aspects that at this point we plan for. So it's making sure. So the branding team is very heavily involved with whether it's a reopening or a brand new build or anything like that. They pretty much the first piece that we need before we start our things are getting the finalized brand book from them. So we know what the direction of all of the things we're going to create for the venue, what that creative direction should be, what colors should be, all of it. So the main items that my team works on are signage, internal and external for the venue, staying in communication with the construction design team because they put the the signage that's, you know, built into the walls, the more permanent fixtures, right. They deal with that. And then we try and have as little as possible, temporary signage around the venue. So yeah, we do signage, we figure out uniforms, we do all the credentials for the building. It's really all of the office supplies, very glamorous stuff.
But like such imperative parts of to make a show go on, you know?
Yeah. All of the little things. Do we have safes? Are they bolted to the floor? Is there a camera pointed at each safe to make sure that we are compliant? All of those things. And
yeah, so many things people don't think about. Yeah.
Yeah. And even more so with a brand new build, you're going in totally fresh. So it's cool to be able to take all of the knowledge from the other shows, that regular shows that I've worked through the years, and, you know, regular venue management roles that I've had, mm-hmm. and say, what are all of the things that we need, all the holes that we have to fix here in this brand new building that we're going in?
Right.
How are we making sure that this can be a fully functioning building when we eventually leave and say, okay, this is your building now, you guys, like, good luck.
Right. That's true too. Yeah. You're not there forever.
Yeah.
In terms of setting up, like what's the most rewarding part of it? Or like just within your job in general, what like kind of makes the hard work pay off? Cause it does sound like a lot of hard work.
Yeah. I love still being able to be involved in different local music scenes. I think that makes all of it rewarding if you really enjoy the people that you work with.
Really.
It's also really cool. You spend weeks just squatting in an unfinished office trying to figure out what's missing. And that first public show is so cool to be able to see people actually get in the building and react to how cool the new space is, and then to watch a real artist on stage perform. That is always so cool to be able to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any like standout shows that you got to go to or worked at, I guess?
I mean, it was cool at Uptown. He's a white rapper named Prof. I had never heard of him before. But he had the first two public shows were two sold out Prof shows.
Wow.
And he's from Minneapolis. So it was cool to see a really excited community come in and see a local, but he's a touring artist, you know, he does clubs and stuff too. So a big local artist come and open the venue.
Weirdly enough, I do know who he is only because he came up on TikTok the other day.
Oh, really?
Yes. I was like, why do I know that name? And yeah, because he, like, it was one of those silly, like, street, like, I'm sure it was stage where, a guy goes up to him and he's like, want a freestyle? And then he's like, amazing. And I was like, what? And then everyone in the comments were like, yeah, that's Prof. Like, come on.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. He looks, it would make sense to me that not everyone would know he's an artist because he looks like just a guy on the street.
Totally. Yeah. Like, I was impressed. I was like, I looked him up and everything.
Yeah.
But that's cool. Yeah. I see what you're saying. It's sort of like a hometown hero, but also like someone who clearly like is appealing to bigger markets as well.
Yeah, totally.
That's awesome. Well, I feel like this like flew by and I still have some fun questions to ask you. I didn't realize we're already almost hitting an hour.
Same.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like in general, as a music fan, like who do you have any role models in music? It could be industry people. It could be artists.
I like this question. And I know that there are people that exist that I look up to. Something that I have been working on and really noticing recently is focusing on my job not being my identity and having a life and friends and just a social life outside of that, because it's very easy to date within the company and just hang out with the people that you're, you know, spending time with at a venue through like midnight, 1 a.m., you know?
Right.
And I just think that that quickly becomes pretty unhealthy because you tie up so much of your, what you care about into your job.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much more. We just talked about careers for an hour, but there's so much more to life than just what you do for a living. Right. And to me, it has, I feel like I have been spending more time being okay with not getting a drink with people after, when we're traveling together, sometimes just saying like, you know what, I'm going to go back to my hotel room. I'll see you guys tomorrow, right. You know? And right. So there are leadership people in the company who also have strong boundaries with that. Some mm-hmm. of them are completely off social media. They come in, they do their job, and they're well respected and do their job really well. And also very clearly care about hobbies outside of their job. And so I know I'm being vague, but I'm just trying to be, you know, cognizant of not necessarily saying names in that sense because my coworkers.
Of course.
But other people outside of that, I mean, Laura Jane Grace as an artist, I love her.
Right. I can't wait to like read about her.
Yeah. When I worked more on the show and tour-ish side of, when I worked with a lot of touring people, it struck me the artists, it was very clear to me the artists who had touring crews, who everyone says that their touring crew is their family, but there are very few people where you work with them and you're like, oh my gosh, everybody really loves each other and cares about each other. And it's so pleasant to come into this work environment for a day and just see how respectful they are to each other. And I don't know. I mean, Chris Stapleton, people feel that way about him and his team.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. I love him.
Me too. I feel like I've been pretty much exclusively listening to Chris Stapleton right now.
He's so good. I'm dying to see him live.
Right. Ugh.
And yeah, I would imagine a job that's like goes into evening hours and in venues and like social spaces, it's so important to learn how to set those boundaries.
Yeah.
So I think that's really great that you mentioned that. In terms of like these types of roles that you've entered, like the COVID testing department and things like that, like for someone who's interested in these roles who might not know much about it, like what advice would you give them to kind of be able to learn more about what opportunities there are?
I if it's the live side of things that people are looking to get involved in, I do really strongly recommend looking up all of the local music venues in your area and getting a ticket scanning job, a security job. You could be a bartender. You could be a stagehand.
Right.
And just learning from that level up. It's great to realize when you enjoy the work that you're doing. And also, I think it's really helpful getting in and trying some sort of job and realizing you actually don't like it. Because then that crosses it off the list. You're like, cool, I won't be. For me, I hated doing merch. Like, great, I will never be a touring merch seller. Awesome, cross that off the list. And it is kind of cliche, but I do really feel like you end up finding where your place is supposed to be in the industry through just following the things that you enjoy. And there are way more positions out there than you initially realize that fit a lot of different types of roles that you like. Like Absolutely. You could be a food and beverage person. There's a huge food and beverage department at Live Nation. local, wow, regional, national level. There are chefs that are full-time employees. There are people, wow, that specifically specialize in catering, which I don't envy them because that sounds like such a difficult thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are just a million different ways that you could pass that you could take. And once you start narrowing down and seeing what you like, you will end up finding the thing that you like. But it does start from the local level.
Yeah, that's so well said. And I think such an important part of it is what you said of like trial and error. Like, I think there's a fear, of course, no one wants to fail, but I think there's a misconception that in this industry, people just like wake up one day and they're like, I'm going to do this. And like, that's how they get it. And it's like, no. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with trying things you don't like, because exactly what you said, it's like, that's how you know what you do like.
Right.
I do want to ask you, just as being a tall person, I'm very curious about your height in this industry and in live events. And I just think it's really admirable. Like, I mean, you said it yourself, like you were doing security. That's not even as like being 6 feet tall, I would be nervous. So I'm just curious about your experience, like as your stature.
You know, I have never, shockingly, never been asked that before.
Really? I was like, oh God, yeah. I feel bad asking this.
No, I love it. It's so funny. The great question. I feel like, so to be fair, when I was doing security, I am not the person that they would put at the barricade catching crowd surfers, because there's simply no way. I think they knew my strengths and I also knew my strengths. But I really think that it is all in how you present yourself. I don't know. There's a weird way that you have to navigate being backstage, whether you're the person who's checking passes or the millions of times that I have been wearing an all access pass and a big security dude has been like questioning the legitimacy of me being back there. Ugh. And so, because, you know, I quickly start feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm this tiny person who has to like, how am I supposed to assert myself in a way that you take me seriously? What if you think I'm lying? All of that stuff. I think so many people have, in particular, so many women have shared feeling like they face a higher level of scrutiny being back there.
Yep.
And I think what it comes down to is people shouldn't feel like they have to conform to this method of coming across in order to be taken seriously. But I have this kind of game face, like stern look that I put on when I'm working, and right, I just walk like I'm supposed to be there. And if someone, and I show my pass, but I just keep walking. And if someone, right, there are still plenty of security guys that bothers them, and somehow they still think that I'm not supposed to be back there. And then they stop me and start talking to me. Ugh. And it's just like, I'm working for the tour or I'm working for whoever. Here's my pass. I have to go to X place now. And moving with purpose and authority, it takes practice. I definitely didn't feel that way in the beginning, but it took a lot of times being in that situation to realize the way that felt most comfortable and authentic to me, to be able to have that come across and still feel like I'm being me, you know, like I wasn't going to be right, mean about it, but I'm supposed to be here and you should respect me being there. And actually I have something I need to go do. So, you know, excuse me.
Right.
I need to go.
I love that.
Took some work for sure.
Of course. Yeah. And I mean, I saw you in action and All Things Go, and you do have like such a presence. That's why I was curious to ask, because I witnessed it. It's like,
yeah,
it's, I think obviously it kind of alludes to the overarching theme of like gender, which you mentioned. And I think that's why it's important to talk about it, because of course, like, yeah, everyone who works there and does what they're there to do deserves to be there. And there's such like dynamics of power trips from people, and I can imagine there's a learning curve, but once you like learn to own it, then you own it.
Yeah, for sure. And I've witnessed two very wholesome moments of one time when I was the person backstage checking credentials, I stopped. I didn't realize it was him at the time, but it was Thomas Rhett.
Oh no.
Cause he didn't have his pass. And at the time it was at Meriwether. He was an opener. I do not remember who it was for, but, and I like flustered him because I said, like, you know, where's your pass? I can't let you back by the dressing rooms. And also Hozier had a similar thing too. I didn't mistake Hozier, but the security guy did.
Oh my gosh. And he's tall.
Yes. And also he was on the pass. So it was hilarious because I was standing there and I was like, hey, he's this guy.
That's so funny. I actually have, yeah, when I interned on site at a venue in college. And so I had a few, I was just like, it was more like, I just had a bad attitude where I thought I was so cool at 19, like, you know, working backstage, and I definitely fumbled a few famous people as well. It's just, it happens. Okay.
Yep. It's very sweet when they react, not like, do you know who I am? Which in fairness, some of those people could react that way.
Yes, exactly. Oh yeah. No, no one was ever rude back. I just was like humiliated by my
Wait, who was it?
It was Sam Smith. It was like right when that song Latch came out with Disclosure. Yeah. And I was a huge Disclosure fan, so they were performing and I didn't know even who sang Latch at the time. I just knew it was a banger. And then I was like supposed to walk them to an interview and they just walked themselves, and I was really like salty about it because I was like, I wanted to meet them. So I was like standing backstage next to like the catering, and Sam Smith was like getting food and he started talking to me, and I just gave him like the dirtiest look and was like so dismissive when he tried to talk to me. And then like an hour later he's like belting Latch on stage, and I was just like in the pit like, oh my god.
That's amazing.
Those things will like stay with you forever.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you can't hear that song now without being a little haunted.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. And then he like got so famous that year. I was just like,
whoops.
Yep. Shout out to Sam Smith. A couple final questions. So I did this with Christina because I knew a little bit more about her music taste, but as you've been talking, I've accumulated a few people that I think you like. So it's F, marry, kill, but instead of kill, it's F, marry, friend zone, because we're nice. But so I compiled Laura Jane Grace, Mark Hoppus, and Chris Stapleton.
That's the most random. And I said all of them, but I'm like, what the heck?
I know, I like wrote it down. I was like, is this going to work? I don't know.
Yeah. I like that you did friend zone instead of kill, because who knows, this could be career ending.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you don't want to kill one of your favorite artists regardless.
Right. Okay. Friend zone, Chris Stapleton. Marry Laura Jane Grace. Oh, that's hard though. I guess fuck Mark Hoppus.
That's not necessarily.
Yeah. It wasn't how I thought that was going to go, but sure.
No, but Chris Stapleton, so like there's something so familiar and like friendly about him. I think he would be a good platonic choice, but I can't really speak on the other two because I don't know them as well. But yeah. But okay, we like it. We like it. So that being said, I'd love to hear like more about your taste. So if you were to, let's say you were doing an opening for a new venue and you got to select the three, like let's say if it was like a little showcase, you got to select the three headliners, who would it be?
I feel like I'm gonna pick people that I haven't seen live before that are high on my list.
Ooh, good call.
Okay. Frank Ocean, because this is my dream and he will still perform.
Yes.
Miley Cyrus, because I love her so much, and I need to Plastic Hearts, the album. I'm so sad that that came out during the pandemic and she didn't get to do a proper tour for that album because it is such a good rock album.
So true. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
And I mean, I haven't seen Beyonce or Jay-Z, and I'm going back and forth between seeing one or the other because I love them both. And they're both such amazing performers. So I don't really want to pick because also that feels...
Well, we can say they did Crazy in Love or something. So
there we go.
Love it. And where would it be?
It would be maybe in the Bay Area, like San Francisco.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Come on, Frank, come through.
I know, please. We're begging.
I was going to give you the fuck, marry, friend zone for those people, but I feel like it's really hard with Beyonce.
Yeah.
All right. And the last question, if you had to give your music career an album title of like where it's been so far, what would it be called?
Ooh, it all kind of falls into place.
Oh, I love that. That's so good.
Thank you.
I think it sums it up really well. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited to release this one. I learned so much, so I really think it's going to be super valuable for people.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You're such a good, your questions, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're such a natural podcast host.
Oh, thank you. I'm still like, talk about imposter syndrome. I'm like sitting here like, am I doing this right? I don't know, but you made it easy, so because it was so interesting. So thank you.
Yeah.